Federal contractors mostly work hard to keep politics out of their workplaces. Administrations come and go, but the work continues regardless of policy. But what if a significant number of employees wants the company out of defense work altogether? This happened at Google. Former Assistant Defense Secretary David Berto is president of the Professional Services Council. He joins me now for reaction. This seems, David, to point to an odd phenomenon that these companies founded, say, in internet or social media get to be big companies with lots of technology that's useful to national security. And then you've got this kind of Silicon Valley counter strain. What do companies do about a thing like that?
Well, Tom, you raise a whole series of implicit questions there. The size of the company, of course, I think there's over 3,000 Google employees reported to have signed this letter. I actually don't have off the top of my head the total employment of Google.
It's about 70,000.
And that's probably just direct employees. I suspect they have almost an equal number of employees who work on a 1099 basis, right, as opposed to a W-2 basis.
Yeah, the so-called gig economy started out there, got big out there.
I think there's three levels of questions here. One is, you know, the internal company dynamics, which, you know, that they're going to have to figure that out on their own. The second larger question is, you know, once a company is in a contractual relationship, I mean, the laws of contracts and the obligations associated with that, I mean, this is a business that comes into play. And there's, I think, a third level. There's a very important national question here, not only the general issue of access to technology, which, of course, is driving a host of government operations today, where the government is attempting to figure out how to take best advantage of technologies that's developed outside of the government, you know, in the commercial world, in the global marketplace kind of thing. And then there's the question of there's a threat out here, right? Because a lot of this work is work being done essentially in a competitive race with other nations, including China, for global dominance in artificial intelligence and the applications of that artificial intelligence for both government purposes and broader societal purposes. And you know, I don't know what the Chinese intend to do, but if you read their documents for their plan, they intend to dominate the global marketplace here and to use artificial intelligence to promote that domination. And you see the stories coming out of China, you know, widespread facial recognition and tracking of all its citizens in public places.
Sure.
You have to wonder whether or not refusing to participate is in any way a protection against that Chinese ambition, and I suspect it's really not.
It seems like there's new territory here because, let's face it, engineers working for companies like Raytheon or Lockheed for decades and decades have come from all over the political spectrum. They might be what we used to call liberal and conservative. I don't know what we call anyone anymore. But nevertheless, they understood the value of national security and were willing to work on those projects, and people left the politics at home. Now it seems to be a continuum for a certain generation of workers, a services company or a company providing services to the government. Do they ignore people like that, or, you know, what do they do without compromising the work and the relationship with the client, which is the government?
Right, and in the end, the question that we have control over is how does the government define its requirements, and then how do they pursue the kinds of engagements, whether through contracts or other forms of arrangements that help meet those requirements. Obviously, it's a free country. Any citizen can decide what they want to do with their lives and the degree to which they want to participate. There's a little bit here that's reminiscent of the Vietnam War and the protests in Vietnam. Lots of colleges were receiving lots of money from the federal government for research back at that time, and much of that research had nothing to do with Vietnam, but it became the target of plenty of protests and campus activity, and in some cases, I think, ended up with universities essentially terminating or dramatically reducing their engagement with the government. It's not clear to me how America ended up being better off as a result of that. But when you come back to if the government can't get what it needs from Google, they'll go somewhere else. So it's not like you stop it from the requirement and you make the requirement go away. The requirement's pretty pervasive here. You know, America is in a competitive race for developing technical capability and being able to appropriately use and manage and bound that technology through the norms, the societal norms and the constitutional and statutory requirements that we have to go along with that. Not every country around the world is following the same behavior constraints. So it probably behooves us to do the best we can in that regard.
We're speaking with David Berto, President and CEO of the Professional Services Council. And switching gears here for a moment, General Dynamics is going to go ahead with its acquisition of the CSRA. And now the Navy is saying, hold on a minute here. And it looks like General Dynamics wants to sell off a big chunk of CSRA already, the Seaport E contract business for the Navy.
This is a situation that you could actually see coming. CSRA did have a number of contracts that were already in place, publicly known. You can look through the database and see the contracts that were there. Seaport happened to be the vehicle through which some of those contracts were moving. And these are contracts that support Navy program offices that may be overseeing or have an oversight role with respect to work, not so much the GDIT, which is the part of GD that will be merging with the CSRA, but other parts of General Dynamics had in the shipbuilding business and elsewhere. So it's really almost your standard identification of and then mitigation of any potential organizational conflict of interest that might occur as a result of this merger. This is a pretty visible one, perhaps a little more visible than many, but I think you could see this coming. And it's actually one of the questions that comes up over and over again as we see larger and larger mergers in the services contracts business, because it's inevitable that when you put two large organizations together, and these are both multi-billion dollar companies before the merger back in on the 2nd of April, and I think you can see that as you have larger and larger units, you're going to have more and more possibilities for these sort of things to be worked out. I think the notable thing about this is how quickly the Navy and the companies work together to both identify what these potential conflicts would be and to resolve them very, very quickly, because they actually can't do that resolution until the deal is finalized, right? There's no basis for mitigation or changing the contracts until the deal is finalized. So they've moved, I think, rather expeditiously and quite clearly in terms of reconciling this. And it's really a bellwether of how this ought to be done for other acquisitions, and there will be more of them.
On the other hand, the potential for large organizational conflicts of interest could prevent some of those big mergers in the first place, do you think?
I think it is definitely a consideration that has to go into the due diligence in the deal, and it could even be a factor in the competition. If you have more than one company competing to acquire a particular company or a part of a company, one of the questions that would be part of that competition is, how much would you have to mitigate by selling off or splitting off? How much potential conflict would be there? It's definitely an important part of the analysis in advance of a deal and the due diligence that have to be done as part of finalizing that deal.
Well, one thing I guess we've learned is life continues to be complicated.
the market is quite robust right now. We've finally got a full year appropriation. I'm not sure if all the agencies have their money yet, and there do seem to be some complicating factors of whether the government's actually going to spend all this money. But the reality is that both for defense and for non-defense agencies, you've got full-year appropriations that at a substantially higher level than the previous Budget Control Act caps. There's plenty of work to be done, and the pace at which that money has to be obligated in order to get that work started is going to be quite dramatic. And I think that this kind of mitigation that you see with the GD CSRA acquisition needs to be done very quickly in order to clear the deck so that the contractors can get the work done that needs to be done to support the mission.
And maybe the weather will get as warm as the market one of these days.
Well, I'm a baseball fan, so playing baseball in cold rain is not the most fun there is. So I'm looking forward to a real spring.
Right.
Nor is watching it. That's right.
David Berto is President and CEO of the Professional Services Council. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.